Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Workday. Workday is the next-gen ERP powered by AI that actually knows your business. It helps you handle the have-to-dos so you can focus on the can't-wait-to-dos. It's a new Workday.
Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
Well, there we go. Well, hey, folks. Beautiful afternoon here in... Where are we, Nate?
We are currently in... We're in Illinois, right?
We did. We just got out of St. Louis, and we're now into Illinois. We are on our way back from Hog Camp 2025, where if you tune into the podcast that'll be on Michigan Wild, that'll give a lot of details as to what has happened. Too much to explain at this moment, but essentially 4 days, a long weekend, down with our friend John Hudspeth in Oklahoma, doing our best to clear his ranch of pigs.
The Lord's work.
The Lord's work. We'll looking at our totals, I would say we have not cured the ranch, but the population waking up this morning at the Hudspeth Ranch in Oklahoma is probably pretty quiet. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, we had some personal records for the trip, right? I mean, Hog Camp 2025 set a new precedent.
Yes. We broke double digits. Years previous, first year, I think we had 7 hogs. Most of them were taken at night last day. Then we jumped the score last year. We brought in, well, I think it was the lack of firepower and the ability to use firearms. So we brought in the big guns. Brought in Nate last year. This year, we brought in, again, someone new. We brought in Mitchell Shirk out of Pennsylvania, as I now affectionately call him, Kill Switch Mitch. He can take out pigs. You got to get him agitated, though. You got to dance the pig in front of him.
It's got to be personal.
Then the pig's got to run away. He's got to get upset about it and then have the pigs come back. And, I mean, boom, boom, lights out.
Yeah, I mean, he had a few faux pas, right, that kind of raised the level of stress a little bit. And then he took all that stress and anger out on those hogs.
He did.
Exactly what John wanted.
As John would so eloquently puts, this is not hunting, this is eradication.
Yes.
So sure. This year's totals with 5 guys, we ended up with an even 15, as yep. John also said, an even 15 pigs. Yeah, lots of flex when it comes to shots being made and actions being done. I'm trying to remember. We had 2 pigs killed, 1 shooter, be it Mitch. I already mentioned that one. We then had John with his 9mm pistol. Mm. Got a piglet at 50. That's a 50 yards.
At night with a red light headlamp.
Yes.
Side by side. Not ideal conditions, but he follows directions well. And I was like, you're low. Really low. He made the correct windage adjustment. And pow, whack. Got it. And that was probably one of the better pistol kills I've ever seen. That was pretty awesome. And John was... I think his trip was made just with was that. Made after that.
He also proceeded to drop said pistol into the mud.
Yep.
So then the gun had to go away for the rest of the night. It got cleaned up for the next day. But that happened. We have video confirmation of Andrew getting his pig.
First one, too.
First one for Andrew. He's been coming. I would say as far as a laying down cover fire, Andrew has that down. If I was ever in the military and I needed a saw gunner, I'm going to put Andrew on that.
Yep.
The guy can sling lead. He's also had, like, I mean, the number of jams and stuff that his gun was real finicky. It was really, really hurting him as far as his potentials. But
he got the monkey off the back, right?
He did.
He finally broke through and got that one, and it was I really enjoyed him being able to look back at the footage on his thermal and be like, oh yeah, like you confirmed that was his pick, he got it.
Yes.
Which is what we all kind of thought in the moment, but I think him being able to, like, it was a firefight, as some may say, when everyone's shooting, you call it a firefight.
The firefight.
We had one, and that was, yeah, lots of bullets were shot at a large group of hogs, and a little chaotic, and you don't know exactly who gets what other than Nick with the first shot. It was obvious, but yeah, it was cool to see. Hey, we crossed some goals off the bucket list. New record on a big shot.
Yep.
And Andrew got his first official hog of the trip of his trips out here. So it was a big win.
It was
a big win overall.
I had my 100 yard, again, this is all guesstimation, but 100-yard headshot on that sow that kicked off the fray. Mm-hmm. Dropped her right there, the one shot, one kill. It was just very satisfying. Going through your whole, like, shot process, the buildup of anticipation, me controlling, like, the fact that we're sneaking around at night, trying to make this happen, being led in by somebody with a thermal, and that whole thermal game, we'll get into that here in a minute. Again, we can go and review a lot of this on that other podcast that's going to be dropped. But yeah, then the last flex of the night is, or of the day, is my guest tonight. I got Nate here. Nate, you shot what I can confirm is the biggest boar that I have ever laid eyes on. This thing was huge.
It was, yeah, it's crazy that something like that is roaming the wilds of Oklahoma and thriving so well and doing such a fine job of survival, I guess. Like, a hog like that, how many times is it that a guy is doing exactly what we were doing? You know, like, that's one thing I thought about. And to see something that, I remember the first year when I came out last year, I was like, man, these things are bigger than I anticipated. I was not sure what we were going to get into. It was super healthy, good fat content. You could tell they're thriving in the environment. And then you shoot one like that, and it's like, what is that? And pretty cool. Pretty cool.
The stats on this pig is we were thinking 300 to 300 plus pounds. Yeah. It had one tusk that came out at like a 45 degree angle. The other tusk that would have matched was broken off. Mm-hmm. Either from fighting or we don't know, but anyway, that broken it off. The tusk alone, it was like 3 to 4 inches long.
Oh, yeah, like, it's, you take your pointer finger, it was all that.
Yeah.
And there's two of them, and they were both, yeah, they were sticking out good ways. Kind of crazy, like, man, get hooked to that, or, and how sharp they were.
Yes.
From working on each other. And, like, I'm a big guy, like, I'm 6'1", you know, 260, 255, somewhere in that ballpark, and this thing dwarfed me. So,
I would say twice the girth.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, like, crazy, like, how deep his chest was and how, you know, how much hog was there. And, you know, we're moving this thing, we're trying to drag it up this, like, small embankment, right? And it wasn't like, oh, hey, let's grab this thing and we'll pull, two guys will pull it and we'll get tired and we'll, you know, then we'll start doing the 1, 2, 3. It was like instantly 1, 2, 3.
Ugh.
Yeah. It was like, what's that? 1, 2, 3. Ugh. You know? And then you had to get three guys on it just to, like, make some progress. So it was, yeah, large and in charge is what he was.
He was. So, yeah, all around great success down there. Be it your second year, Nate, what has this hog camp become for you? I know it's kind of like, for me, it's a way to get away. It's a way to connect with like-minded individuals. Specifically, yeah, from the podcasting world, but at the same time, like, I feel like this has been, I don't know, it just seems like a really needed weekend. How about for you? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, last year was my first year doing it. Like, going into the first year or the first trip of anything, you don't really know what to expect, right? And sometimes expectations can be met. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes you get into something that maybe you thought would be one way, and it ends up being different. And, like, last year, it exceeded all expectations from a bonding, hard work, maximum effort kind of a weekend. And I'm for that. Like, once I love, you know, pushing the limits to, like, what you can do from, like, a physical standpoint. Like, but I don't really get opportunities to do that, right? In the whitetail woods, us Midwesterner guys don't do extreme mountain climbing, or we're staying out in, like, you know, crazy elements in a tent. This was a little different. Like, we're just going to go, we have a limited amount of time. We are going to go hard to paint when it's dark out, because that's our most effective time to find some stuff. And we're like, let's sleep, you know, driving, you know, 16 hours plus to get there and turn around on short notice and go back home, throw some really good sits in. And then there's like the pressure of trying to execute good shots. And one, you know, you may even have opportunity for, you know, one good shot when a group comes into the feeding station, you know, in daylight. However, maybe get that one great shot, but then every follow-up shot is not ideal circumstances. Throw yourself in a moving side-by-side, trying to locate these things and take shots at running animals. It just kind of puts you in a challenging position. So that first year, I was like, oh, my gosh, I love this. Like, this is awesome. It's a lot of fun. Different than anything I've ever done, like, hunting-wise. So then going into this year, I was just – it's like the anticipation was at, like, a different level. And it was an anticipation to see your buddies. You know, you can communicate all throughout the year through group texting. And it was like just once again to see the guys that you kind of develop a brotherhood with. And it's really cool because we're all like really low on sleep and an opportunity for like guys to have short fuses. And it's almost like the opposite effect of this group. It's like the less sleep we have, the funner we get, the more laid back we are, the more we, you know, have that charisma with each other, like, you know, poking fun and just having a really good time. This hog camp is more of like it kicks off a new year for me. Like, rabbit season is, you know, tomorrow is last day of small game hunting in Michigan. So this is like a really good change of pace. And now this hunt is complete and it's like, hey, I'm not doing any more hunting until October 1st or maybe September. For, you know, waterfowl potentially, and turkey, I guess, too. So it's kind of like the changing of the guard. Like, this hog camp is, hey, 2025 is a new season, and we're hunting, and what a great, enjoyable way to kick that off.
Yes, yes. I fully, fully agree with that. The amount of, yes, and to double down on the amount of sleep that you were mentioning, you yourself, we've been affectionately called the Michigan Boys. That's, we've got our own little subgroup within the group there. We've been known as people who are positive. You yourself, I think I feed off of it. I mean, we all feed off of it. You are the hype man when it comes to getting us to go. When we park back, we've done a loop. You're always looking back and being like, hey, one more loop, one more round. And that, it really does pick people up when they're ready to go back. We slam a Red Bull. We grab an oak. Well, we don't grab an oatmeal cream pie until something has died. Yep. Luckily, every round we got, we definitely packed on the calories to this time for the amount of picks that went down. But we also finally, I would say this year, things also, like, with the anticipation being second year for you, third year for me, the Hogs changed their game plan this year. The Hogs proved that they are hard to pattern, hard to anticipate, and keep you guessing. We had a lot of, well, we had how many daylight interactions?
Yeah, a couple. Way more opportunities than last year in the daylight.
Yes.
But they slipped through the cracks, kind of.
Right.
Which was kind of unique. And big, like, a couple of big groups, too, that did. I did end up killing one, you know, last sit, daylight, the loner. I was the only one that had a pig come in and offer a shot. But there was pigs all over. But within a couple hundred yards of all of us that just somehow were like, here they go. Like, yeah. How does that many pigs slip by all these guns? But it still is, at the end of the day, it still is hunting, right? We kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, it's an eradication process. Like, we're trying to dent the population in a way to move the needle just that way. It's kind of a futile attempt, it feels like. But definitely, if there wasn't this kind of a thing going on, I don't know what, like, that ranch specifically, how many hogs would they contend with if they were not, you know, constantly shooting them and trying to, you know, keep them off their ground and, you know, keep them from affecting their calves and their cattle in general. So it's a process. But yeah, I think it was unique to see the vast difference between interactions this year than compared to last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, surprise ambush where they come running out next to the side by side. You'll hear that story. But then even again, the brazenness, if we put up a, or at least John put up a ring all around all of his feeders to keep pigs and cows out and allow deer to come in. We had we had one group with me and Mitch. The pigs came in the door and then had enough gusto to just blow through the side, not even going back to the door to get away. So, I mean, you could look at it as poor setup, or at least a relaxed setup. Everything wasn't buttoned up as tight as it should be. John's property, though, they went through a lot of big wins recently. Several of his normal blinds, his normal boxes, were tipped over. You know, you could see 4x4 snapped. It was rough. For John, it was like almost the point where we were like, hey, we're here. Use us. Let me help you get this thing. He's like, it's just so big to pick it up. He goes, we're not gonna do this weekend. So he's kind of recovering from that, and I think scrambling from this past season. His attention is now really on his second property. And so I think that's where these pigs have kind of like had a chance to take advantage of the situation. But having all that thrown at them, you know, it's one of those things like the pigs adapted. The pigs have changed. Well, checkmate. It's it's not checkmate. It's a check. Now, how are we going to respond? So we're going to come back next year. That's what I really wanted to then get into on this podcast specifically. I just gave you kind of the wrap up of how the weekend, but now we as hunters going to look and acquire our meat, we found ourselves also in a check situation. We found ourselves been in the corner. We took some precautions to try to bring back some meat, or some, you know, not precautions, but we put some plans together, and you know, we had some things happen where I ended up flying and Nate brought down the coolers and my equipment for processing the animals. Unfortunately, I came down the day early and we got four pigs. So we had to scramble on the fly. Yes, the coolers were in transit, but they were still a good 12 hours, 16 hours away from us being able to use it. We did our best with those first four pigs. Broke them down as I talked about and documented before, a good field dressing, get them all cleaned out. We then torched them. We torched the guard hairs on the outside using a garden torch. I then quarter them up so that we have our back hams. We have our, would be like essentially the back straps. It's the pork loins. The pork chops are essentially that's what you're going to make out of the pork loin and the side meat, belly meat, and then the two shoulders. So six pieces per hog. And we put those in two coolers that we did have. We had one from Andrew and we had one from John. I was trying to fit four pigs into two, I would say, run average size coolers. So I had to pack them really tight with the meat. Didn't leave a whole lot of space for ice, but I did leave the ice in bags so that we had a bigger hunk of ice that was going to melt. It was going to last a little longer, and hopefully that was going to cool that down further. Ice goes in with these packed coolers, close the lid. We stacked them on top of each other using the one weight to keep the other lid down on the other cooler. And we just had to let them sit there and wait for the cavalry to arrive. When the cavalry did arrive the next day, we had more pigs up. We were ready to get those ready. We were going to now divvy up. We were going to pull the meat pull the quarters out of those two coolers. What did we find, Nate?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we went hard when I got in town, you know, shot some more pigs the following morning, slept maybe sub 3 hours, I think, somewhere in there. And it's like me and you were like, okay, let's get to work on these. And we took care of those pigs. And then once that was done, we're like, okay, we have some cooler space. Let's kind of divvy things up. I opened that lid of that cooler and instantly smell the dreaded smell that, unfortunately, I've smelled before with wild game, and then visually saw that all that hard work and stuff you guys did before I got there, that me had turned.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and I knew it right away, but it also was really nice having you there because of your experience with wild game meat and stuff. So when you saw it too, you instantly had the exact same reaction I did. So it was nice to have the validation, but still, it was like a punch in the guts, right? It was, I didn't even have that labor of love into that. But just going through what I've been through last year and this year, it was like, that was a lot of effort that we no longer are going to be able to return rewards of.
Yep. It hit me hard. Yeah, we had those both coolers go sour. I was hoping that once we pulled the top one off, like maybe we saved the bottom one, and we had not. Both of them, you could already see the green on the bone. Things were starting to, decay and rot really well. And yeah, it was just a kick to the balls. It really stunk. From that though, in the grand scheme of things, I didn't want to give it the oh well, but it's now like, okay, how do we respond?
Well, we had to move on relatively quickly because we had just filled three coolers up with more meat than what were in those ones. So I think it was a, let's pivot. What do we need to do to make sure that does not happen to these three coolers?
Correct.
And we instantly were like, okay, now we have the cooler space. We thought we were going to have to divvy up more. We do not. So now let's more ice per meat,
Yeah.
Pound per quarter needs more ice. So we ran town and we're not stingy on ice and got even more.
And we cleaned out one cooler from one gas station, and then we took a good big share of someone else's as well.
So that was priority number one, right? And then which that allowed, that was me and you in the truck together. And I think we, the entire time on the way there to get new ice, on the way back, we were discussing kind of like what happened.
Yep.
Why did that happen? And, you were really hard on yourself. And I was kind of like, not necessarily like, I was beating myself up too almost a little bit because I was like, maybe I should have like been like, hey, like how much meat is in those two coolers? But, you see a closed cooler and you think, hey, that box is checked.
Yeah.
That box is checked. And we got more. We're fast paced, right? Like you get done cleaning pigs and doing those things. It takes a lot of time and effort. Granted, we've gotten a lot better at it than we were, year one, year two, and now it's third year. Efficiency is at an all-time high compared to years in the past. But it's get that done, clean up, throw some food in your stomach, and you're back out there.
There's
not like a lot of time to sit around and think about these things. You're reacting while you're sleep deprived. And I think we kind of kept going back to was our mindset was right. Right? Like the desire to preserve and use this meat was a priority. And seeing that happen, it was such a kick in the balls because that meant more. There was more to that than just pulling a trigger and eradicating, right?
Right.
There's another level to this, and that sucks. But also, I know a lot of our discussion was, like, what happened? And last year that didn't happen. And I would argue last year it was hotter than when we processed those, that group of pigs that we processed last year. And that meat was totally fine. But it just came down to a heavy fat content with meat that was compressed and just didn't ice. Wasn't enough ice to cool that meat down rapidly.
Yep.
And the difference was probably it was about 15 degrees cooler at night last year than it was this year.
That's true. We did have a little bit of a kickback from the night air where we didn't get that this year.
But I mean, you had enough gambrels to hang them all up. Like last year we only had one. We're working like one, maybe two. So you would think if we were going to have issues, it would have been.
It would have been last year. But I think it boiled down to, I really have come down to like three things. So we're playing Monday morning quarterback. All right. There's already going to be people that are playing this game. I'm going to jump on top of it. All right. I'm already heady, folks.
Yes.
One, the amount of meat that we stuck into those coolers, we packed those tight. We didn't have the volume necessary to be able to not put it, to be able to put in quarters and ice. We had to pick one. That's where we went with just the meat and then the few bags of ice in each one. Tim, I left them in the sun on a spent slab. I'm going to chalk that up to me being sleep deprived because I didn't take the necessarily the equipment or the forethought to slide those over to the shaded side of the house. Would that have ultimately changed things? Well, maybe. That could have been one thing. A, we had sun out. It was heating up that concrete pad. Even when it gets dark, that concrete pad stays hot for longer. It just doesn't. It's going to melt that ice because it's the R value of those coolers was not going to stop it.
And I do have a slight, you know, like defense there for you because the day you guys put those in those coolers, it was not sunny. The sun peaked out a little bit. It was overcast, a little rainy. The hot part of the day, when that was going on, what were we doing? We were butchering other hogs.
Right.
So our mindset was task at hand, not, hey, those two coolers sitting over there are just getting baked right now.
Yep.
On concrete. So not trying to make excuses, but also it's like, dang, duh, dummies.
Yes.
Like, we had that thought. Like, oh my gosh.
We had Marshawn Lynch, and we chose to pass.
Yep.
So now, when cavalry did roll in, we broke up our new pieces. We had that space in there. We checked this morning. We wanted to make sure that we got a quarters over to Andrew. Andrew took a couple nice big hind legs to do something with those. I know those are going on his smoker. He was very excited about that. So we were giving that up, and everything was looking really good.
Yeah.
Out of that blue cooler.
When we put the coolers are good size, but also a little older. They have seen some abuse, so.
Uh-oh, hold up.
Dry-aged steaks used to be a steakhouse-only indulgence. An old-world charcuterie was pricey due to being imported or created at a small batch-specific scale. Thanks to UmiDry, their synthetic dry aging bags and cases allow you to create these meat crafting treats in your own kitchen. Working in tandem with your fridge, the UmiDry bag material allows moisture and air to pass through, making it possible to dry age large cuts of steaks or roasts. Paired with their curing and seasoning kits, along with safe and easy to follow instructions, salamis and dry sausage are well within your grasp. Use the link in the show notes and sign up for the newsletter to receive 10% off your order. UmiDry, helping us elevate our wild game from the home kitchen. Hunters, listen up. If you're tired of struggling to hoist up your deer or big game after a successful hunt, it's time to upgrade to the TIBOS Block and Tackle. With its self-locking mechanism, you can easily lift up to 300 pounds by yourself without the need to tie off to anything. Just pull the rope and it locks in place. Made in America and backed by a lifetime warranty, TIBOS is my go-to tool for all my hoisting and tying down needs. Check out the link in the show notes or head over to TIBOS.com.
This is why you do it, friends.
This is why you do it. Yep. This is the first run of this. Well, hey, folks, again, if you are just joining in, this is going to take some more editing. We're trying to run this in the truck. We're trying to run this with cell phone data. And we all know how that goes.
It's about as real as you can get it with podcasting right here.
Absolutely. I don't even know how the audio is. There's no way to even check it on here. This will be going into the comment section for Riverside because I have no idea what's going on. Anyway, we were talking about the meat. We had a unique situation this year where we didn't have the coolers in time for the first round of pigs. We were more successful than we were prepared. Usually that doesn't happen very often, but here we were stuck with pigs. I used two coolers that were available. One of Andrew's, and then we also used one of John's that was there at the place. And we chose to just go with those. Could we have done a couple other things? One, could we have purchased another cooler? to then spread meat out away from those two coolers to divvy up more space so we can get more ice in. That could have been an option. Second thing was, could we have put those coolers off the cement pad into a shaded area where they're not directly hit by the sun or heated radiantly? Yeah, we could have done that. I was a little sleep deprived, and that didn't come up to me. Third, we didn't have nearly the cooler, drier, windy temps that we had, or conditions that we had last year at night. We had more still, more humidity. In fact, we had a little drizzle, and we had higher temps. Ultimately, this came down to the disappointing fact that we opened up the coolers to divvy the meat, and we found that both of those coolers had soured. Kick to the pants, and that's where we were discussing what could we have done better. And ultimately, it came down to make sure you've got enough cooler space to accommodate the appropriate amount of ice to be able to chill those out. Second thing, find a place for those coolers to be out away from the sun, just to let the cooler be able to do its job and not have to fight the elements and fight the heat on the inside. Third, I don't know if I got those. Those are those two things.
One thing to this thing. The more we talk about this, the more things I think. Just when you shut that lid of, you know, wild game or whatever, you can't just be like, yep, that box is checked and that meat's going to be okay. You do have to monitor and do those things. And I think guys who are maybe more southern climates or guys who, you know, shot some elk and had cooler transportation are probably laughing at us and be like, yeah, you dumb-dumbs. But, like, I have never been in last year was the first time I actually had to preserve meat with ice for an extended period of time ever in my life of all the wild game I've shot. You know, all the opportunities for it to be warm, I'm already home, and I will stay up late to process that animal and get it in a chiller or get it in the freezer. We're 1,000 miles from home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were faced with a different task, and we failed. Like, that was it, chalked that one up to failure, but we definitely learned a lot.
Yep.
We have some solid introspection on that. The other thing I thought about, you know, you always hear like meat care, right? Aging your venison or aging whatever you're doing. And there's some schools of thought to, oh, you better rinse that cavity out water before you, when you hang it, or soak your meat in water to get the blood out of it. What I saw happen to those pigs and how quick that happened, they ain't kidding when they say water's gives the ability to grow, you know, bacteria quicker.
Yep.
And do that, because I mean, we saw that firsthand. Like, boom, that stuff turned real. Like, I still can't believe how quick that happened. Like, that it was like, okay, it's warm, but there's ice in there. Yeah, there are coolers. Yeah, there's a lot of meat, but still, that was impressive to see how quick that happened. That,
yep,
unfortunate.
It did rain on those pigs at night, and just moisture and dill. So they went in. I mean, they weren't drenched, but there was just humidity and moisture that went into that cooler, and there was just nothing we could do about it.
Yeah.
So there you have it. We have a loss. But now, like with any loss that you get, you're going to have to go back and reevaluate. Next plan of action, we went through with exactly what we needed to do for next time, but we took it a step further. We're not satisfied with just coming prepared for bringing back, you know, pigs and then hope that they get back. I'm done hoping. I want to now do this the right way and do this, and it's going to take a little bit of investment. So we were tossing around the idea. We put it to our group of amigos. We're purchasing equipment for camp. We are going to be housing some equipment there. One of them, the creme de la creme, the center piece, the keystone, if you will, that is going to hold this together, is a deep freeze chest freezer. That's what we're going to get. We're going to chip in. We already ran it by John. Did we run it by Luke yet? Or we assumed Luke would be okay.
Luke loves us. We got his cows in for him, so.
Oh, good.
He's got to love
us. Yes, yes. We got, yeah, Luke let his cows out. I don't, well, he didn't let them out. He actually, they busted through the gate.
Watch them.
Which, you were telling me at the backside. So, we were separated during that escapade. And you were talking with John. You were worried. You were worried for our guys. Team down there.
Yes.
Team Gate. You were worried about Team Gate.
Team Gate was, I didn't know the experience level. And I assumed that part of the team had never been part of such a thing. And I think I was right to assume that. and you were the one I was like, hey, drove up on a farm with a lot of turkeys. And turkeys are substantially smaller than this cattle that was running around. And it's dark. And we're chasing set cattle back towards you guys with a truck and me waving and yelling like a hooligan. And I was like, I told John, I was like, maybe you should have took one of those guys and I could have helped at the gate. And he's like, ah, Luke's down there.
Yeah.
I'll be all right. I was like, okay, good. But man, I got a little, I think everyone's butt puckered up a little bit.
It definitely.
Adventure.
So yeah, I was on, so there was Team Truck that was pushing the cattle, Team Gate that was holding the gate open. That was me. And then and to keep them from going down the drive, you had to stand in the driveway with arms open, basically trying to create a fence of people, which there were only two of them.
With headlights from a truck shining at you.
So with head, yeah.
Completely blind.
So that was, you're playing chicken with 20, I don't think they were 1,000 pounds at that point, but they were definitely 800-pound animals.
Oh, yeah, I'd say 750 to 800 pounds. I mean, they're good cattle, you know. They're year-old stuff, a little older than a year, and they're going to be on someone's plate before too long. So, I mean, they're up there in weight for sure.
Right. So, anyway, yeah, you guys pushed those cows at us. And my job was to hold the gate. And I knew that you play chicken with these cows. And it's a hard game of chicken. You have to hold it there. You gotta know that something's going to intervene. The Lord said, be still. And I tell you, I was still.
So, for a little bit of rental for a chest freezer space, I think Luke could be like, hey, fair trade.
Fair trade.
Fair trade.
Fair trade. So we're going to get this deep freeze. I don't want to say it wasn't a dream. I didn't do a lot of dreaming. I did a lot of, like, when we did sleep, it was I literally, like, stopped living for a little while. Like, I literally just passed out. Life function stopped. And then I'd come out of it. But I was having some ideas that a couple ways that we could use our chest freezer. One, as I think as you were talking, or I mean, as I think we were discussing too, we wouldn't have to necessarily make them into quarters right away. We could come back with these animals field dressed. Mm-hmm. We could, in the dark, hang them, torch them, split them. That's going to add a little bit of time, but then those halves would then go into the freezer. I have a module that goes into the plug that you have a secondary thermostat that could then run that as a cooler. But if we had already prepped that freezer, had it plugged in, it was already cold on the inside of that thing, put those two halves in there, turn the module on to be a chiller. We're keeping that meat then at 34, 35 degrees above that freeze so that when we then decide to go home, when we decide to go home, grab those quarters or grab the halves, quarter, put it into the cooler already cold. The amount of ice we're going to need is going to be far lower. But at the same time, I kind of want to travel with the fresher meat, knowing that I'm going to be going from that chiller setup to another chiller setup. I can then further process some of these.
I think we thought, the reason why I know I asked you about leaving them potentially in halves that night was, one, we can get the meat cooled down in case we have more nights like we have this year. Because, you know, you're shooting these hogs within an hour before darkness, maybe a little, you know, this year it was a little sooner, but, you know, the coolest part of the day we are right there. We're like, that's facing us. Like, when we're killing these hogs, like, the day has turned. It's not getting hotter. It's getting cooler.
Yep.
So the thought was, let's say we do kill a few on our, feeder station or heading back to the truck or picking up guys in the evening. We end up shooting some. We can head back to headquarters where the chest freezer is. And if we split the things in half, we can, I was just thinking like, okay, we can cut the heads off. We can, nip up at the joints, their feet, their hooves, their split. We have the hide on after the hair's gone, lay it the one way. And then it's easy to, we have one piece and then a second piece where we can have a little bit of airflow.
Yeah.
And opposed to just having a Jenga or a Tetris system going on where we're spinning this quarter here, spinning that quarter here. We kind of got to get it, like, have some air.
Yeah.
And then if we get, like this year, where we were kind of like every time we went out, we shot more. We can be like, okay, let's assess the situation. These day one hogs are chilled to this level. We can now quarter and put those in our coolers with ice or whatever, and now fresh stuff can go in there and be chilled. And we kind of have like a revolving door.
Right.
And maybe that will add a little bit of time to our evening, but that takes a load off of us during the hottest part of the day.
Absolutely.
And don't feel the stress. So I think that is definitely a, maybe the half thing isn't going to work. Maybe we will have to do something different, but I think our thought process is definitely going to help. I think it's going to really, having that one element's going to really assist in our potential for problems, I guess, would be spoiling
yeah.
in the future.
So I was even thinking, too, in that that setup, I like how you were saying, too, like day one hogs versus day two hogs, getting those day ones, chilled way down. Maybe even it is, like, get them to a soft freeze. But that delicate balance, what I don't want to do is get into that trap of freeze-thaw, where we freeze these pigs solid. We then get them in our coolers. They drive home. They're eventually going to be able to thaw out, which is fine if you were going to use it all right then. But the more times that you do freeze-thaw, you get the ice crystal damage. You're taking fresh meat at this point, and you are essentially rendering it dry because they're going to lose all this moisture. Those bags that you get from, frozen meat, that what you would call blood isn't really blood. It is hemorrhaged moisture from the muscle. So what should be in your meat is now out of your meat in those vacuum sealed bags in the freezing. That's what we don't want to have happen even before we get the hogs home. We're already starting to dry them out. We wanted to try to do the chiller idea, get them really cold, and then move those over to the cooler when we're ready to go. Being that it's going to be a big freezer, I mean, last year when we brought home, how many hogs did we bring home? Because you did a wild game. Five or six pigs. Those fit in my 8-foot freezer that I turned that modular on. And that did a great job of holding that meat until you were able to come with your coolers and come pick it up, get it to your uncle. And then I was actually with my meat that was in there. I was then processing that at the table further, getting it into different cuts that I could then. I took that butchery to the next level so that then it's like all I had to do was go out to the freezer, vacuum sealed bag of pork all ready to go. I didn't have to break down a quarter to get what I wanted. So having that ability to not freeze it is the way we wanted to go. Yeah. But that seems like that plan is going to be doable. Andrew was on board with it. I think we had the thumbs up from John.
Yep.
I think Luke's going to just have to live.
Luke's going to be fine because we're going to give him some nice meat, right?
He's like,
ooh, the guys are here, and Andrew's been doing a lot of, intricate stuff. I heard this pizza that he made was to die for, but you guys didn't feel like saving me, so I didn't get a chance to
try
it, but...
We all had seconds, and, yeah, nobody thought of you at that point, no. So...
I mean, the food is the key to a man's heart, right? So we just got to keep him happy with, with that.
Yes.
But no, Luke's awesome. I can't... The whole Hudson's family, man, they're so welcoming. I think they understand what it means to... be givers, as in like allowing us the opportunity to do this. Granted, they will rebuttal and say, you're helping us out because like the two of us can't do what you guys do in 2 days or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Just with the more firepower and the time. So it's really a good dynamic, but I do want to make sure that's very clear that we appreciate the boys. But if you don't let us keep a freezer there, then maybe
I mean, we'll just have to find it. We'll have to then because then the next ideas we had is to make ourselves a little bit more self-sufficient. We were thinking trailer, yep, and a couple freezers in that, or just taking a freezer and strapping it on your cover,
mm-hmm,
and then bringing that down, plugging it in, letting it chill down, and then use that in the process. So,
which all these are great ideas when you've had a full night's sleep, and once you're sleep deprived, it's like, oh, we gotta try to make this as easy as we can on ourselves.
Right.
But it is 1,000 miles one way. So we're trying to just be as efficient as we can with these things. And on a budget conscious mindset too, right? Like, I would love a walk-in cooler, man. Like, we have a portable walk-in cooler, the uses, but I don't have the coin that I'm ready to drop on that. And I think there's a way we can do this and still be very relatable to anyone else in our shoes, right? If be that a bear, be that venison, be that anything. Hey, if you have a camp or anything, like, it doesn't have to be a solo endeavor. And I know having like you to help and Andrew and all these other guys, it makes the task seem much more achievable. And looking forward to trying. Like,
yeah,
is this master plan gonna work?
Well, we're gonna try dying. We're gonna die trying.
Yep.
On the whole thing with it. And you just, each idea we get, we just have to wade through it. There's going to be some hiccups. We're going to have to wander around these ideas. It almost like I want to say, like, we're going to be roaming for solutions. Hey, speaking of Rome, do you like that? Do you like that tie-in?
I love it. I'm going to give you a little... A little silent clap over here.
So we've done talking about our wild game here. We're transitioning to Rome, and I have a member here of newly formed. You guys are fresh out the gate here. February, March. When did you guys sit down?
March was when we hey, we're launching some social media pages. So we're less than a month into this officially. It's been talked about a lot longer and some you hadn't seen stuff, but yeah, Rome has been live for about a month.
Gotcha. So on Instagram.
Rome Hunt.
So at
Rome Hunt.
At Rome Hunt.
Yeah.
I
believe the YouTube page is maybe fired up here pretty soon. My phone's been kind of going off in the group text and come up with what do we want that to look like, but we've been there's been some behind the scenes work and guys are working tough to get some footage and stuff on there, so there should be a YouTube channel coming up pretty quick too.
Excellent. It's you and who else is part of this new launch?
So the core group of guys that are starting this is me, Adam Miller from Bowhunter Chronicles, Joe Davis from Generations Hunt Podcast. Both those guys are Michigan local Michigan podcasters. And then a good friend, Jake Bergheis, and then Bradley Collins. He's actually he's the outlier. He's not a Michigan guy. He lives down in Tennessee. However, he's part of the family. Like he comes up to Adam's hunt every year. Adam Miller hosts a deer camp, and he's been going to that. And the guy, fits right in with us. He's originally from New York, so he can relate to the hunting culture of Michigan and that grind, and he loves chasing critters with a bow. But yeah, we're all kind of just were all guys that were doing maybe something, you know, opposed to Jake. Jake was just kind of along for the ride, was like, hey, I like, he's been filming some of his stuff anyways. And we kind of approached him and said, hey, you want to do a little more? He's like, heck yeah. But, you know, doing podcasts ourselves as well as things where, you know, there's a desire to maybe do more or do a video of some sort. But then when you're a podcaster, you could, you know, a lot of us, we're all one-man shows, right? We do the scheduling, we do the editing, we do all that. And that takes up a lot of time on top of a full-time job. And the thought of throwing videos in and trying to do a YouTube channel to maybe portray what we do in a different light over long format on the airwaves. So we all kind of like at the same time kind of had that same thought and naturally were like, hey, yeah, let's, this is a group of guys that started here and we're kind of all going to kind of share the load of Rome. And Rome stands for real, opportunistic, adventure mindset. And that's kind of what we want that channel to be like. Following us normal guys around, trying to videotape a lot more stuff than what I've ever videotaped in the past.
So with this real opportunistic
adventure
mindset, what is that? Are you saying that that is different than what we're seeing right now out of the hunting and fishing culture?
So I don't think we necessarily want to. We don't think we're going to be better than anyone else. We just think there's maybe an opportunity for. When you got three separate podcasters, these guys, you know, like Brad's got his own channel. He's got, you know, a TikTok page and he's been, you know, doing a lot of content there. You don't really see like all of them guys getting along. It's kind of like, oh, they're there, they're here. Or a YouTube page may be like, this core group of guys are diehard public land hunters. Or they're only, they only chase, you know, big game out west. Or they're private land management guys that have, you know, beautiful lush food plots. Their textbook, you know, their 101 is, you know, private farms that they manicure and do a lot of habitat work. I think what we kind of were like is we don't really want to have any set thing. Let's get a variety of guys that hunt a variety of ways, come together like a friend group that we are, and just show that. Just to show how, you know, Adam goes throughout his year, how he's out there primarily hunting public land, and he was like, I'm shooting deer by recurve this year, and he went out and was flinging arrows left and right, and just showing that process of it. And then we have another guy that he doesn't know any different than chasing the high class deer on public ground in Michigan. Like, to him it's just normal because that's what his dad did, that's how he was raised, the way he goes about it is that way. So it's trying to shed light on all these different characters or ways to hunt, opposed to being like, this is the only way to do it. There's many ways to do it. And show like a hog hunt. We're showing all those other adventures of whitetail hunting out of state, whitetail hunting in Michigan, shooting spring turkeys, you know, all these things that you can do, and just kind of have that, like, that design. There's a vision there, and we're just going to try our best to do what we can. And yeah, pretty exciting. And, you know, maybe have some cameos by local Michigan guys.
You betcha. You betcha.
To add to that,
I like this idea. Tying that in too, we had a discussion last night. Shoot, the one time that we did sit down, we sit in comfy chairs. We're not in blind chairs. We're not rolling around in a side-by-side.
Bouncing against each other,
trying to find pigs with thermal scopes. But what we were doing was we finally sat down, and I think it was you and Mitch kind of started it up, and we were going through, like, not only other podcasters, but other guys in the media production of hunting and hunting and fishing. And we were kind of like picking out guys who we appreciated how their approach was and how we emulated that. And it was kind of funny. Like, it was almost like, hey, well, I'm team so-and-so And, you know, John was over there more with you know, team land management, and, you know, would consume that content. And we each kind of, like, were saying we had different people that we enjoyed. Very, and most of the approach that's thus far we've seen has been very narrow, deep nets. Like, you're very specific. That it's not wide, but it is, this is the subject. Where Rome, what you're saying, Rome is the opposite. We're casting a wider net. We may not get as deep as in some of these details, but we're going to show how these guys that all live in this kind of the same area get fired up about different things, are passionate about different things. And the pursuit that you take is just as real, just as opportunistic, and just as adventurous as, say, Adam, who does things different.
Amen. Yeah, that's exactly what we're going for. I think it's going to help. So, like, even if anyone has followed Adam, you know, Boner Chronicles podcast, he has always been a guy that he wants to help as many people as possible get into, you know, the outdoors, get into archery or whatever that may be. So, like, a lot of his stuff is geared towards helping people decide what kind of gear they need to have, or, like, you don't need to be this elite archer to go climb a tree and try to shoot a deer. So he's had that mindset since I started my podcast. I've always wanted to just encourage people to get outside and enjoy creation, be that with hounds, be that with a fishing pole in your hand, be that, well, you know, out west doing something, or trying to, you know, target whitetails with a gun or with a bow, or you want to be a little crazy and target 5-year-old bucks or mature bucks. Hey, whatever's good for you, like, step up your game in whatever way that may be to be a lasting, you know, license holder, you know, in the state of Michigan, and try to improve. And that's my mindset. So I think in Joe too, generations to hunt, he wants, this is a generational thing of new waves of hunters always coming in. So I think us together have that mindset of, hey, let's show everyone how wide open this can be. And if you follow into this thing, or if you really enjoy sleeping in the back of your truck and walking on ground you've been to, or you maybe procured a knock on door permission property that you can, you know, put in food plots, do habitat work, and shoot your first deer with a bow, and you can get that, you know, that experience. I think that's really important. I think that could potentially help kind of move people in a way that it's not like, oh, they're the public land hunters. Oh, they're the private land hunters. Oh, they only use saddles. Oh, they use this type of tree stand. Oh, heaven forbid they use a gun during gun season. You know, there's a lot of that stuff in the outdoor content, which gets clicks, which, you know, gets passionate followers when you kind of take that stance. But that's not what we're trying to do. I mean, there, you may notice that we all kind of do things similarly because that's kind of the groove we found. Maybe the majority of the time we are using a saddle. Maybe there's a year where you find all of us sitting in a box blind overlooking a food plot because we got to kill some does. Or, hey, we're going to go do this duck hunt together. Like, you don't know what that could take us, but there's just a lot of ways to do it, and it's going to be a lot of, it's a work in progress, but we have good ambition, I guess.
There you go.
This is going to go.
So, yeah, as we were breaking down those hogs, you know, I was getting to work with the torch. You brought out a different type of lens. You brought out something different to shoot with. Where you were walking around with this camera. Are you fluent in camera?
I am not fluent, but I feel very influencey. All of a sudden, it was weird. Not, you know, holding the knife and helping you. It was like, I got to do some of this. But I think that's going to be the challenge for this, because we're just so used to, I mean, you, for example, I mean, you're a wizard with a knife because this is what you've done. Like, if I didn't take that moment to maybe take some little video or give you an opportunity to do that, like, maybe I captured something. I don't know if I did. It might not be in focus. It might not be the right color, but at least there's now direction and effort going somewhere. And, I felt a little weird looking through a lens of a camera opposed to a scope on this hog hunt. But, yeah, it was really cool. And I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be good for a lot of people I care about too. Like, I think it's going to open the doors for, some really good guys, down to earth, the individuals that have a lot to offer the hunting community. And I know we all want to take advantage of that. And just because I think deep down we don't want to see hunting end. We don't want to see any of this stuff go. And who doesn't want to see Nick torched down a board or showing us how to scrape it with a, I don't know how big that knife was that you were using to scrape that that down. But I mean, it's pretty cool to see that. I've never seen anyone explain that before.
Yeah. So. No, it was fun. And it's, you know, here I am creating content and I've done a little bit of video, hoping to do more of that myself. It's, I have a craft I've learned, but now I have to also try to learn a new craft to be able to be somebody who can capture that image. I'm a pretty good storyteller, but then at the same time, how do I do that in the visual realm? How do I do that? And seeing that you guys are taking those steps to capture what makes things good, capture what makes the outdoors exciting, that we're giving that opportunity to stay our story is just as good as anybody else's by being able to portray that. So no, it was weird having you like look here, like circle around. At one point I had my shirt tucked in because I didn't want to have anything like draping on the ground, or I didn't want to have that the shirt hanging into the pig, so I tucked it in. And yeah, at one point you were like, hey, suck in your gut.
Oh shoot.
And it just got me laughing. There I am trying to be serious. You know, I'm just like, hey, just focus on what you're doing. I got a cameraman telling me to suck it in the gut. I don't know what Mitch was doing behind me, but man, he was being a knucklehead during the whole thing. He was not helping.
So if you guys see some sweet pics from this adventure we had, you know, the cameraman, Nate, actually did have an eye for it, had some settings right. But it's definitely a new dynamic, and I think that it's going to take time. But this is going to take a moment. If anyone does have a skill set with a camera and that is your gift, I mean, man, I give you guys props. If you're one of these guys that's been doing some stuff, maybe been grinding it out and staying up late, figuring out how to edit and take pictures and run cameras, and you know this is your hobby, dude, props to you guys. There's a lot that goes into it, way more than I ever gave credit to. So keep it on if that's your thing. Don't give in. It's a really good skill set to have, in a lot of things. I think you can diversify however you want to be, but man, I've been doing this and trying to do a few things, and the rabbit hunts I've been filming, and let me tell you what, there's a lot more mistakes than there's wins right now, but get them out of the way for New Year's.
Yep. Also, just along with your camper work, maybe I'm exposing a little too much behind the scenes.
Ooh, expose it, baby. That's what long format's for. It's
yeah.
Podcasting.
So you were telling me that the last hog that you shot with your flex, that you were the only one that took one in the blind sets.
Yes.
You were holding the camera in your left hand.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldered the rifle in your right hand.
Yep.
And you took that pig out one shot. Did you press the record button?
I sure hope so. I'm afraid to look back at it. Well, if you're a dump, sometimes you got to face adversity in different ways. And fortunately for me, I make a lot of bad calls and mess up. So you got to figure things out. I thought I was going to be all prepared when I got down here. I had one of those nice, you know, bog death grip tripods. I was like, sweet. I know they make an adapter for fluid head for them. Stopped at a Cabela's or a Bass Pro's on the way down, bought the thing. I'm like, sweet, I'll be able to swap that out. Camera can go on that. I can, you know, run the camera and do that. I don't have to buy another tripod. I already got one.
Yeah. Awesome.
That was a fail. I'm missing a key component to that to work. So now it's like you're in the blind. It's like, man, I got this camera. Adam is going to light me a new one if I do not give forth maximum effort on this. I'm saying that with a smirk on my face. But anyways, I was strategically sitting here. And fortunately, you got a destination, right? Like, if the pig's going to commit, I have a shot right here.
Yep.
So I set up, you know, in the blind in a way where, you know, got the left hand on the camera, holding up propped against the leg, in focus right by my face, guns on the bog death grip, and, you know, one-hand operation is able. And, yeah, man, I think I made it work. So hopefully that will grace the airwaves of social media and YouTube here in the next few weeks, or even next week. But, yeah, it gives a new element. I mean, I was pretty tore up after shooting that pig. I was shaking. I had the adrenaline dump going, and it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, I got to flex. Hey, Rome boys, what have you killed in the last month?
Oh, that's the call out is out. Let's see if they step up.
Step it up.
Well, Nate, this has been a fun time. I know I'd like to say that we have to go someplace, but we don't. We're sitting next to each other for the next few hours, 4 hours and 58 minutes, to be exact. But where can my listeners, again, tune in with you? We already know that Michigan Wild is a huge contributor to Sportsman's Empire. Yes. But, give us the details on social media where we can find you, and then give me those details again on Rome.
Yeah, so yeah, Michigan Wild on Sports and Empire. This upcoming week, it will be my 100th episode for the Empire. So in Michigan Wild, which is pretty cool. Kind of a check mark, you know, to that elusive number. Can't believe it's already been that many. But yeah, Michigan Wild Pod on Instagram. Make sure you got the pod at the end of that to follow me on social media. Instagram is kind of where all that stuff is. There's a lot of reels, there's a lot of pictures, a lot of that stuff. On there, I do have a Facebook page. You can just look up Nate Roosevelt on that. And then Rome Hunt on Instagram and Facebook. And look for, check my Instagram page out for Michigan Wild Pod, and I'll have some updates on the YouTube channel. And yeah, I'll find that content there. And just kind of do a little plug here for you, Nick. I think anyone who's listened to this podcast has, been along for a ride. Maybe this is your first time listening to it. Being able to hear you talk about your passion for wild game and for chasing that wild game, but then also not ending at the harvest, but taking it to whatever level you feel like, from food to field to plate, as you like to say. It's been a pleasure doing these trips with you and seeing you in your element, right? In your element of, hey, we have all this meat. You take that, there's a load of responsibility on your shoulders because you put yourself out there. Like, this is what I want to do. This is what I enjoy. And man, you don't disappoint. So keep doing what you're doing. Keep having that passion for, using the knife and doing those things. I think you're helping a lot of people. And he is just as weird and just as awesome as he sounds in the podcast. So keep doing what you're doing, man.
Oh, Nate, thanks so much. Well, hey, folks. This has been an awesome time. If you get a chance to go outside, if you get a chance to explore anywhere in your hunting grounds, your fishing holes, wherever you're going, make sure you're keeping it real and you're taking those opportunities to be an opportunistic. Make it adventurous and really just go on and get out there and have a wild time. So yeah, whatever you're going to do with that, make sure you keep knives sharp.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.